Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today I have Bobby Tinsley of PriaTech coming to us from St. Petersburg, Florida. How's it going, Bobby?
Nathan, it's great to be here. It's going well. Sunny day out here in St. Pete.
Yeah. Is it, it must be already pretty hot there.
The humidity hits you sometimes. It's not so much the heat. It's just, you know, when that humidity comes in with the weather patterns, it's, you feel it. So
yeah,
it's warming up.
Cool. Well, you've been on the road a lot, which we're going to talk about. But first, let's just talk about PriaTech. So, for anyone not familiar, what do you guys do and where this this concept come from? Give us the little backstory of.
Yeah, absolutely. So PriaTech, right, it's an acronym for Prize Advertising Technology. So that's what it stands for. And we've patented and trademarked prize-based digital promotions. So, you know, we do a lot of stuff, which we'll talk about. But at a very high level, we take prize promotions and we marry it with digital signage to be the only performance-based digital signage in the industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. It's based off of static ads that you can't measure. And we're revolutionizing that industry. But the concept really got started with my partner, you know, founder of the company, Malin Barbakar. He actually, in the late 90s, built the third largest coin-op company or arcade company in the U.S. And so he was very, you know, famous for taking a lot of these games out of the home and putting them in sports bars and these, you know, big retail cabinets like Tiger Woods PGA Tour and Madden Football. He had a partnership with Electronic Arts and they put these games out. They put 25,000 cabinets out worldwide.
Wow.
And, you know, what was really interesting was, you know, a lot of these games, as they were going out, they put the golf game, the Tiger Woods PGA Tour, online. So they put out 10,000 cabinets, 5,000 were online, and they gave out cash to actually enter these video golf tournaments. And it was fascinating because, you know, over the course of 3 years, they gave out $1 million a year to play video golf. And the machines earned $100 million because people wanted to compete and play video golf on the cabinets. And that's really where the light bulb went off for him, because he was like, wow, it's like, you know, first of all, like, these people are signing up. They were literally entering their social security numbers because they were winning so much. He had to obviously tax them. But he was able to control, you know, by changing weather conditions in a golf game, he could migrate, you know, 500,000 people that they signed up to these locations pre-Facebook. And that's really where he said, oh my goodness, this is incredible. Like, this is so much bigger than sports bars. And
cool. That's an amazing story. Yeah. I spent a lot of time, not a lot of time, but a decent amount of time playing some of the golf games, cabinet golf games. It's a pretty addictive stuff. That's fun. So how long has PriaTech been around?
So we're going on 9 years. 9 years, you know, I've been involved with Malin since day one. You know, I come from an entertainment background, you know, entrepreneur myself. And, you know, just seeing where the world was going in that space, right? Everything's going on demand, you know, streaming, you know, voluntary engagement, people really, you know, obviously engaging with the things that they love. You know, when I met Malin, we first became friends and then took a look at what he was, you know, envisioning. And we literally just got down on a napkin and started drawing things out. And that was kind of the starting process of where this thing is headed. It's been a good journey.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. Cool. So I love that, that kind of backstory, the genesis story. So today, it's mainly focused, as I understand, on kiosks. So I walk into a mall and now, you know, I see a kiosk with some games. Maybe give a little snapshot of the business today.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about this, right, it's like a giant, you know, almost 8 foot tall. It looks like a phone in many, you know, aspects. And, you know, these ads that are running on the kiosk, we call them prize ads. So, you know, backing up, like the traditional ads that you see in malls and airports, they cost on average $4,000 to $15,000 a month, typically per location, and they're static. Like, you can't measure them. So our whole philosophy is, you know, we go to the advertisers and we say, if you're willing to give out a prize, which they all want to do prize promotions, yep, we will give you that display ad for free. So for instance, let's just pick an example of Nike, right? Give out some sneakers. We'll give you, you know, we're about to launch in 20 malls in New York City. So we'll give you $200,000 worth of digital signage for free. Just give out some sneakers. So the conversation with the brand is pretty promising right out the gate. Now, we're going to charge you. The only time we're going to charge you is when someone walks up to the kiosk, because it's interactive touchscreen, and actually engages to win your prize, which proves that they're actually interested in the first place. We call that a price per engagement, very similar to like a Google click, but much deeper in meaning, because you know, as you go through this process, I come up to the kiosk, touch the screen, register to win Nike sneakers, I want to play. First thing they ask me to do is sign in. So I have to be willing to step over this wall to actually you know, register to play for that promotion. Then I'm going to weave in a survey question. So, and this is anything that the brand wants to know. So let's say, you know, I ask you, Nathan, what kind of sneakers do you want to win? And you choose running shoes. Well, we know two things about you in 10 seconds. And this is all about, you know, profiling over time and building you as a consumer, things of value back to you, which is part of our, you know, our patent in this process. But for the brands, you know, they want to know how people feel about their products, right? So you answer that survey question, then we're going to weave in a game. And the game is a huge part of what we do. So we have licenses with Sony for Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, Fremantle for Price is Right, Family Feud. I mean, just epic game titles. Yeah. You're playing this experience in a retail location that people aren't used to. And at the end of the game, you always walk away a winner. So you're either going to win, you know, the grand prize, an offer off of the product that you chose, you know, some type of discount, and or the end-to-win token, which, you know, being at the retail location, because obviously we're launching these in malls to start, your chances of purchasing the product go through the roof because it's actually something you chose and you've got an incentive in your hand. So we showed in testing last year 30 to 50% offer redemption. I mean, just unheard of numbers, simply because you didn't come up to the kiosk and play for anything you weren't interested in. So we're really excited about that. You know, we feel like this is huge for retail, and malls is just the starting point for us.
Yeah, it's all very intuitive, almost one of those ideas that, like, in hindsight seems so obvious, right? Which are often, I think often, you know, the hallmark of a great idea is one that, like, in hindsight is just obvious and you know, makes a lot of sense, right? So that's cool. Let's talk a little more about that. So you mentioned the token. So I'm winning a coupon to go take to Foot Locker, or is it a token? And, you know, I'm kind of foreshadowing a little bit here because we're going to talk about your token stuff. But tell us what the actual kind of currency is, I guess.
So it's actually both. So let me back up. Like, so you just win this offer that comes off of the kiosk, right? So let's say you won 30% off of Nike, right? So, you know, obviously you're at the retail location, you're incentivized to spend that. So those redemption numbers are high. But what we're doing simultaneously, and we did this last year in testing, is every time you played for your favorite promotions, we gave you loyalty points, okay? We called them end-to-win coins. So what happened is I played for Nike, I won 25 coins. Maybe then I chose Clearwater Aquarium, I won 10 coins. And I continue to engage. So at the end of the experience, when I sign out, it says, congratulations, Bobby, you have 200 coins in your end-to-win account. Download the app and exchange them for gift cards. So one out of six people downloaded our app and continue to engage 38 times a month at an average engagement of 65 cents. So as a mobile user, you were worth $25 a month for us in testing, you know, $300 a year. That blows away Facebook on a per user, you know, monetization level, right? So the whole idea here obviously is, you know, that offer that you won and that token, right? You want our loyalty point, you won the offer. Well, we're now applying blockchain technology to our platform. So that offer, we call it a merchant buck. So that offer is actually going to run on the Ripple network. And so it's an opportunity to add and expand that usage. And it's much better for the merchant. And we don't have to deep dive here on that. But the other side is that the token is actually going to be a cryptocurrency called the end-to-win token. And it's expanding the usage of that. And we're very excited about, you know, all of the applications that provides on that side. And again, it's all about value in the ecosystem, value for the consumer, value for the retailer, obviously value for the location partners. It's got to work for everyone.
That's interesting. So I want to come back to this because let's talk about the token. We'll talk about Ripple. We'll talk about all this. I want to, the question I'm teeing up for a little bit down the road on this, this is, you know, do, does your, soccer mom getting out of her, SUV or minivan understand the token world, or does it matter? Or she just gets this merchant bug, you know, I don't know. Maybe you throw that out there now.
Is this- you're so smart, Nathan, you're on it, man. You know, listen, let's talk the token for a minute, right? So I've been investing in the crypto space myself for a while, right? Part of the problem with the cryptocurrency market is that it's extremely hard to get into and get acclimated to, you know, setting up an account, right? Even just setting up a Coinbase account is challenging,
yeah.
Especially for people who aren't tech savvy. So, you know, blockchain technology, however, and what's happening, if you really peel it back, I mean, this is like, you know, internet 3.0 stuff. Like, this is groundbreaking to, yeah. you know, what it's doing to a multitude of industries, not just ours. So, you know, what we're excited about is the mass adoption, the opportunity for that soccer mom to walk up to a kiosk, right? Engage with brands that she likes, win tokens that go to a mobile app. That's a very seamless experience. She doesn't have to set up a Coinbase account. She doesn't have to understand cryptocurrency. She doesn't have to do any of the above. She just has to engage at the kiosk, win something. And then she actually has the opportunity to utilize that at retail. And it's more value back to her because it was something that she, you know, she actually wanted to engage with. It's more value back to the merchant because obviously it's sparking their sales. And then you're tying in the other layer to this is the esports piece, which is the fact that, you know, say I've earned 50 tokens and you've got 50 tokens. Well, I can challenge you via, you know, let's say Words for Friends. Mm-hmm. And you get a text message from Bobby and it says, Bobby's challenging you to, you know, do you accept? You say yes. Let's say I beat you. Well, I just took your 50 tokens. So, you know, the esports industry is fastest growing sport, a huge opportunity. And again, it's all about making it mainstream and simple. That's what this is about. And I feel like, you know, we're on the cusp of creating something very simple, but also very powerful for the partners involved.
Yeah, really cool. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about raising money for Priyatech. So I'm going to jump towards, we'll go in reverse chronology. So you just got off a road show that took you to Moscow, London, Monte Carlo, a bunch of other places. Where all did you go? And tell us about this road show. I want to hear.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, Moscow, London, Geneva, Zurich, Lugano, Switzerland, Monte Carlo, Monaco, Italy, San Remo, Milan. It's been insane. You know, we went on the road show. You know, we're very blessed. We have John Najarian from, I posted some videos on our LinkedIn from CNBC is on our advisory team. And him and his partner, Andrea Porcelli, you know, we did an interview with them in NASDAQ. And, you know, as we were starting to get this off the ground and getting ready for our New York rollout, and they just fell in love with the project. And so, you know, we got on these road shows and seen all of these, you know, these cities and we're meeting with investors and potential partners, you know, internationally. And it's been incredible. Like, obviously they're beautiful places. Like, you know, it's never a bad day going to Monte Carlo, but just being able to see the international support behind Priyatech. I mean, people get what we're doing. I mean, I think in some of these other markets, they're actually, they're so bullish on crypto. They're so bullish on, you know, technology innovation. They're looking at this and they're like, you guys literally have created the holy grail for retail. Like, and it's been exciting. Like, so that's been huge validation to our team. It's put a lot of traction in the project and it's really helped, you know, on the capital raise front with what we're doing.
So what are you raising a venture round now, or is this a token sale roadshow or some combination? And then the second part of the question is, who set up this roadshow with, you know, all these, I'm assuming you're going and you're pitching like little groups of investors in these different cities. So kind of a two-part question there.
Yeah. So the second part of that, so a lot of family offices, a lot of, you know, VCs that are getting involved in the blockchain space. You know, also a lot of, you know, high net worth private investors, right? People that are looking for projects to be a part of. So we've seen a ton of those people. We are doing an equity offering. So we've actually raised $16 million. It's equity. You know, what's interesting about what we've done is the equity offering on, we've raised $6 million since the beginning of the year. And it's been a lot of traction because obviously we're excited about integrating in the end-to-end token and the platform and obviously expanding out into the market because we're launching, you know, we did our beta testing last year. We're launching in New York in September. So we'll have these kiosks going out into, you know, some of the top mall locations and also hotels in, you know, greater New York. So okay. a lot of attentions, you know, revolving around that and some of the big partnerships that we've signed recently, which we get to talk about.
So maybe let's touch on this or drill down a little more on the roadshow. You're raising an equity offering. You know, I guess, why are you going to Moscow and Monte Carlo versus Silicon Valley in New York? What's the logic here?
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fully transparent, I mean, it's both, right? So we've got, you know, we've got U.S. investors that are extremely excited about this, but you know, what's happening in the capital markets, as you know, right now, I mean, it's really like a revolution of, you know, what you got Reg A plus, you've got all these opportunities for companies to go out and basically, you know, build their idea and put it out there to the masses and let people see it, right? So, yeah. You know, the roadshow piece for us is, you know, two part. One, we have great relationships through our advisory team that they have international connections for fundraising. But the second part of it is obviously we have a lot of potential partnership opportunities in Europe. And, you know, every city we went to, we got offered to partner and deploy kiosks in those cities. And that's exciting. Like, and we're going to do it. I mean, Malin's last company, they put out, you know, kiosks, 40 different countries. So we've got a lot of international experience from a management perspective, but we're laser focused on New York and US right now. And, you know, hope to execute on some of those things here in the future.
So you mentioned something I want to touch on. You're talking to family offices, high net worth folks, some VCs on this roadshow. You mentioned a lot of these connections are coming through advisory teams. So the question is really, every single person listening to this podcast would love to go do a roadshow to all these places across Europe, you know, meeting with family offices mm-hmm. and with. So how did you actually set this up? Do you have someone on the team doing this? Is this a third party, or you mentioned it's through your advisory team? You're saying we want to get in touch with investors and they're arranging some meetings. Like, give me the granular in the weeds. Of setting up this.
Yeah, in the weeds. So, you know, it's honestly, it's kind of like an aggregation type approach, right? So like when we, you know, obviously it's all relationships, like everything in business is relationships. So, you know, case in point, we did the interview, we got a great advisor on our crypto advisory board, Brian Feinberg, you know, super plugged in guy, you know, he's out of New York, you know, he's done work with Google. I mean, they're building some really cool stuff. So Brian is a pretty network guy and started sharing, you know, the Priatech business model with people, and people were getting excited. And we got the opportunity to go to NASDAQ and actually do an interview with John Najarian, you know, from CNBC at NASDAQ. And that was like one phone call that was like a yes in 3 seconds. And Malin and I flew to New York. We did the interview. And after the interview, there was a couple other companies, by the way, one that we're actually doing a partnership, which is pretty exciting. But, you know, when we got off that NASDAQ interview, you know, John came up to us and he said, you know, I really, really like your business model. This is really cool. And, you know, we were very grateful and we started building a relationship there. Never went in with an intention to, you know, have him on our advisory team, which is excited for the opportunity. And I think that's where things start, you know, so that was a great example. John has a partner, Andrea Porcelli, and, you know, she comes from, you know, Wall Street, just, you know, has been involved with helping a lot of companies. She was, you know, on the road with Twitter. You know, she's been involved in a lot of projects that have had a lot of success. And so, you know, shared it with Andrea and they said, hey, we want to be on the team. And, you know, they have a lot of, you know, groups around the world, a lot of influence and, you know, people who are willing to listen to the story. And, you know, obviously, you know, we're willing to tell it. So we said, hey, let's go. And so that's really where it started. And then other advisors have joined the team. I mean, this has been a massive amount of momentum since the beginning of the year. We literally have assembled, you know, if you look at our white paper, which we're about to put out soon, I mean, it's a world-class team of advisors that are, you know, really helping to push the project forward. And so, you know, to answer your question, you know, because I know you want to kind of in the weeds answer, it's all about relationships. It's all about networking. At the end of the day, those are the lifebloods of any entrepreneur. You know, anybody that says, because people did ask us, and I've got friends of mine who have companies that are like, how do I get on the road show and do that? And I'm like, well, you spend 8.5 years of blood, sweat, and tears building a project, and you continue to foster great relationships, and you end up going to Monte Carlo and meeting people. Like, you know, it's not an easy, you know, A to B. It's just, you got to work.
Yep. One or two more, and then we'll move on because it is an interesting topic. But I want to touch on some other stuff. So like, did you arrange the cities first? Or like, hey, we know investors in these cities, let's set a date. We'll kind of rally a meeting around that. Like, and then are you actually kind of pitching one-on-one, or is it more almost like do you get a little group together and you're presenting to a group? Like, what's the most effective way to do a roadshow is the question, really. Yeah.
You know, so logistically going, you know, internationally is always a challenge because you're going from city to city. And, you know, the last trip we just did, I was 6 days. I think I was on 13 or 14 flights. Like, it was insane. You start not knowing where you are. And my entertainment background kind of prepared me for that back in the day. But anyway, you know, so sometimes it's groups. So, you know, Andrea and John, they're really good at putting together groups of all different types of people. There's investors there. There's potential media partners, right? You're presenting your company sometimes alongside, you know, 4 or 5 or 10 other exciting companies, right? And I like that format because it gives you an opportunity to, you know, go out there and stand out and show like where you guys are. So that's worked well. The other side of this is, you know, some of those opportunities lead to one-on-ones afterward where, you know, after the, you know, formal presentations, people come up to you and they obviously want to talk and dive deeper into the business. And then there's been other opportunities that we've set up that are like, you know, private investor only luncheons where, you know, literally we'll go in and Lynn and I will present to, you know, a group of 15 or 20 investors, you know, a private lunch. You know, you buy lunch for everybody. They come in. It's just like, listen, here's our story. This is what we're, you know, this is what we're about. This is where we're going. And the dialogue that's come out of those pitches has been pretty incredible.
Really cool. That's fun. All right, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about actually kind of what you're pitching. So you've got this longer than average duration. I'm sure there's been a few iterations along the time or evolution of the business. But now it sounds like you've kind of figured it out and you've got
sweet spot.
Your sweet spot. I mean, what are you pitching these days? Do you guys have a lot of proof of concepts in malls, or is it really all focused on this launch happening in New York? I mean, are you kind of selling the future, or are you selling some current results? And you know, what's the pitch sound like?
As far as proof of concept, yeah, we've completely proven our metrics. We've proven that we can sign up the users. I mean, right now when we launch, you know, in New York and nationally, we'll show Groupon type growth. I mean, at our current metrics, that's not, you know, factoring in some of these other partnerships. So we can sign up users. We've monetized, like I talked about on mobile. I mean, we showed in testing 38 engagements per month per mobile users and an average of 65 cents an engagement. So you were worth $25 a month to us as a mobile user. We signed up 135,000 people. Over the course of 6 months with only 65 kiosks, right? Cool. No, those were in 14 malls, right? So a big part of this was going in and, you know, working with the malls and we've, you know, developed relationships with the top malls in the country now. And, you know, that whole process was a lot of, you know, years and years of testing and iterating and building it. So, and our metrics, as far as our user base, I mean, we're hitting, you know, 18 to 45, is our sweet spot, you know, a little bit skewed women, but we hit men there too. But I mean, literally 55 and up are engaging at the kiosk. I mean, it's very rare that you see a platform that can hit so many different types of demographics, which is really built around, you know, what are you engaging them with, right? We all have prizes and products that we're interested into and you know, we're able to connect the dots there. So it's definitely proven. Now, obviously, the world's starting to get their eyes on us. We're coming to New York and the biggest media market on the planet. And, you know, we've got mega partnerships. We signed a deal with CBS, Sony with Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. And like I said, Family Feud, Price is Right. We've got other partnerships. We brought on some extremely high caliber executives from other industries have just joined the team. So now we're ready to go big, you know, and we're going to go big. So it's exciting.
Good for you. It must be fun to be you right now, right? I mean, startups are hard. Like, you've slaved away for 9 years and now you're kind of enjoying, or you're about to. I won't, you know.
You know, from your mouth to God's ears, you know, I will say, you know, I got to give it to my partner, Malin. Like, you know, I watched this guy. I've been involved since day one, but I've only been full-time in Priatech for like 4.5 years, right? So, you know, in the early days, you know, we were doing trade shows together, and there's other core team, core management team here as well. And everybody's been involved, but, you know, nobody knows what a founder goes through in a company when they're starting something and driving around in an F-150 van and pitching investors in parking lots and, you know, driving, you know, literally there's times that he drove, you know, 2 days to get somewhere for someone to walk away in 10 minutes. Yeah. And he wasn't even through his pitch, you know, and you know that from what you've done, right? And we've been a part of that process for so long. So, you know, people are always like, oh, it's so exciting right now. You guys are about to crush it and doing this. It's like, yeah, they don't understand that other side of it, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears side, right? But that's part of being an entrepreneur. Like, you got to wake up every day and make it happen. And it's got to be about something more than just making money, too. It's got to be a philosophy. It's got to be a passion and a purpose. We want to build a platform that's very disruptive, that's a better solution than what's currently in the market. And we also want to build something that provides a lot of resources to do good in the world, because there's a deeper purpose to what we're doing, too. And I think that's a good combination to have success.
That's awesome. Talk about, let's go back in time a little bit now. How have you funded this for 9 years? I think I saw Florida Funders on there, which I believe is an angel group.
Yeah.
Was this mostly Malin's own capital, or, you know, 9 years is a long time to kind of be running. So how's it?
Yeah. I mean, out the gate, it's, you know, it's self-funded, friends and family kind of, you know, traditional way. And then we're angel funded. So, you know, we made a call very early on. We didn't want to go the, you know, VC sell your soul route. So we decided against that. And we've had offers, especially recently, of companies to try to come in. But again, you know, they come in with that other baggage and, you know, that's another conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've raised money, you know, through accredited investors, you know, angels, groups like Florida Funders, groups like the, you know, Thai and other groups of angel investors that, you know, vet deals and, you know, have that whole infrastructure put in place to find quality projects have been huge for us. And, you know, we've got a great investor network and have had a lot of support, right? A lot of just meeting people. And it's always, again, it's like, it's relationships. You meet someone, as you know, and, you know, you go to meet someone, you don't meet the person that you were going to meet, but you happen to meet someone else and they end up opening up a door and you're sitting on some celebrity's couch, right? It's just like the weirdest things have happened over the years, but that's all led to kind of building it to this point.
Yeah. Interesting. For this current round then, jumping back and forth a bit,
$1 million,
is that mostly family offices and high net worth individuals, or?
It's high net worth individuals and groups. So we've started to tap into some strategic capital, which has been, you know, really exciting, because a lot of the groups coming in now have relationships that they're bringing to the table that are going to push the business forward tenfold. So we're excited about that. So that's been, you know, a lot of the recent capital, but earlier, it was, you know, more like, you know, one step at a time kind of deal.
That's interesting. Yeah. I was going to ask, maybe we can always cut it out if there isn't really anything to say there, but, you know, any tips for kind of pitching or raising money from family offices, which I think a lot of people hear about, but don't really know what that means, right? And people know what VCs are. People know what angels are. People often don't know what family offices are, or how to reach them, or how to pitch them. I don't know. Any thoughts on that question?
I mean, yeah, I think they, you know, they each have their own kind of perspective, right? So family offices, I mean, the whole idea is that, you know, there's generational wealth that's been set up, and, you know, typically $100 million and above that is allotted to invest in different types of opportunities. Now, some of them have a very traditional mindset and they're looking to, you know, almost operate exactly like a VC. And then others are like, hey, if I see a project and I like it, we'll take a look at it, right? So knowing your audience is probably the biggest part of any pitch. You got to know who you're talking to. you got to know their background. You got to know if they've invested in projects like yours before. So I'm really big on trying to do my homework before I'm sitting in front of somebody. That's not just investment. That's anything you're selling. It's always about knowing who you're talking to. Yeah. So many times, you know, we mentor a lot of younger entrepreneurs in our community. And, you know, both Melinda and I have done a lot of that. And I see people that they just get up and start talking and they have no idea, like, you know, who they're talking to or why the person would even want to take a listen. So some of that stuff is important. Now, on the family office side, what I will say is I have seen a lot of family offices come in with a very that high and mighty cloud. So you can't be you can't be afraid of, you know, someone looking at your pitch and giving no emotion, like they could care less. But actually inside, they actually really do care. They're just, you know, used to hearing so many deals. They're just like, you know, I'm not going to show if I'm excited. So
that's interesting.
I've seen a lot of that.
That's interesting. Huh? Yeah, I have never pitched a family office. We've been adding them into our database in Founder Suite in recent months, but I've never pitched one myself. So I, you know, kind of curious. I mean, like you're saying, a lot of times it's generational wealth, people who made money and have set up, you know, a lot of times it seems like a lot of family offices are people who made money in real estate or more traditional industries.
And yeah, and diversifying it out because mm-hmm. they want to prolong it, or family, you know, they want kids coming in and running parts of it, right? It's got to go somewhere. So that kind of a thing. But what I will say, which is exciting about kind of like the blockchain side of things, what you're seeing is a disruption in the current way money has been raised, right? I mean, you have the Jobs Act. Now you have all this, you know, new forms of crowdfunding, token generation events, you know, whatever they're called, security utility tokens, all of that. What it's doing, and I've been on the phone recently with VCs that, you know, I'll just be frank, you know, 3 years ago, they wouldn't even take on our phone call. But now they're sitting there trying to figure out, well, what are you doing? And they're trying to catch up on this space because they know if they don't get involved, they're at threat of being eliminated themselves. So when you really start to look at what's happening, like everybody should have, they should be excited. Like it's a great time to be an entrepreneur.
That's cool. Let's go on that, down that wormhole for a bit. Are you guys going to do a coin offering or, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of those things in the regulatory environment. It's really important to establish, like, you know, Priotech is not issuing any tokens. So we're implementing in a cryptocurrency token into our platform, right? So, you know, the money that we've raised has been equity, and the token, you know, we believe we will have a utility token in the platform that's going to fulfill the needs of the network. And I think that's important because you have a lot of, you know, have a lot of gray area out there in the market right now that's trying to figure out, you know, what it looks like and what it is. But to date, Priotech has raised equity in the company, $16 million.
Yeah. That is interesting. You're creating a token, though, that you can earn through your activities on the platform, through interacting with the ads and the games, but you're not doing a token sale. That's kind of, you know, I think an interesting dynamic. But I guess, well, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and on that front, so think about it this way. Like when I play at the Priotech platform, I can earn this, you know, these rewards, these merchant bucks, which are those offers and those tokens for free, you know, by interacting with these brands. Right. So, but the point of that is that Priotech, right. So Priotech owns and operates the patented network of, you know, kiosk and the mobile app that's, you know, we're deploying out into the US and eventually internationally, and we're incorporating the end-to-end token into our platform, right? So Priotech does not control the end-to-end token, which is an important part of it, but that token is going to, you know, run into our ecosystem. And so you know, we kind of lay that out in our white paper. Mm-hmm. But it's very important to kind of draw the lines on some of these certain things, because I've been a part of hearing people pitch stuff, even on these road shows, which I'm just like, really? You know, I could see why the SEC is looking into, you know, some of the stuff that's being said, right? At the end of the day, like, we have a real business. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, you know, where's your token price going to go to? I said, we're not interested in a token price. We're interested in building a sustainable business. Like our focus is building the Priotech platform to be, you know, to be what we know it can be. Right. So I think that's important.
It's got to be tempting, though. I mean, from my perspective, and I'm a very novice amateur about tokens and everything, but, you know, you see all these entities, not even companies. I won't even do them the justice of calling them companies. All these entities raising massive amounts based on a white paper and maybe a team background, but really nothing to show for it. And they're raising these massive amounts of money. Yet you have this real business with a real utility token, not a utility token masquerade or a security token masquerading as a utility token.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it must be tempting to, when you see some of these entities raising hundreds of millions or even, you know.
Well, so think of it from this perspective, right? Like, what are you selling in Priyatech right now? It's a security, right? So when you think about a token, right, if a token does not exist and an investor is buying that token, we'll just call, because, you know, there's real estate companies that are being tokenized right now. Like the whole entire world is going digitized in terms of these things. So it's not about the token, right? It's about the environment that the token was sold. So if you think about it, right, like there's nothing wrong with following the proper regulatory guidelines and raising capital for your venture and having the right disclosures and risks out there and lockup periods and all of the things that go with that, right? Yeah. So raising money, and there's been several successful examples of companies doing things the right way. And there's a lot of projects that I'm excited about and stuff that I've participated in. So it's not about raising money on a token sale, and you could have a great token. What it is when you raise money on a white paper without any regulatory compliance, and something's a utility token, but you haven't filed any anything with the SEC if you're in the US, like that's a problem. Like, you know, that, and last year you saw companies raise $200 million and literally they don't even have a business plan. They got a white paper that doesn't make sense. Yeah. What's great about it is not on that instance, but what's great is that the market is looking for new ways to raise capital, and people want to support innovation, but you're going to see less of that fluff now, and you're going to see more mature projects come into the market like Priyatech that have a real use for blockchain and a real use for a solution and a real product that actually exists. And if those companies go out in the market and they raise money under the proper filings and they're compliant, then those companies can have huge success and open up capital doors that they've never had before. Yeah. Now, when you talk about a utility token, right, and a public sale environment, right, and we could talk about that for a long time, but bottom line is, you know, first of all, a token needs to actually be live in the network. So a lot of people have raised all this money off of these quote unquote utility tokens, and there's no token that actually exists.
Yeah.
So that's a security, you know, and I think the SEC has been pretty clear on that. But at the same time, if your token is live in the network and it's actually, fulfilling the needs of the network and all of those things that go alongside of it, and it's not being bought in a speculative manner, but it's actually being used to engage in the network for the health of it and obviously access and all of the different things that come alongside that, then yeah, I think there's a huge place for that. And you hear the recent, talk on Ethereum and all of that. Like, there's all positive signs for the industry, but there's still some gray area that we need to, get some clarification on. And I think it's important for companies to operate in a compliance first, capital raising second mentality, and not go out there just thinking that, oh, there's people just want to give me money, so great, let's just get it. Because listen, that just because you got a check today doesn't mean you don't have a problem tomorrow. And
absolutely.
You know, that's a very important part of this.
I think that's great advice, actually. Cool, man. So I won't take up too much of your time. There's so many things I could pester you with questions about, but take us into the future. You're launching, you're raising this $16 million, which, are you done or is it still a rolling raise? And then go ahead.
We still have some of that left. We're raising another $3 million in equity, which we're excited about and got some good interest on it. The goal on that is, we're launching in New York in September. So we will be launching in those malls. And we also just did a partnership that we're really excited about. Like I said, that's putting us into a lot of the top hotels in Manhattan and greater New York. So think about this. We'll have the first ad network that's able to go out there and deliver results for clients across both retail malls and also tourists and hotel visitors. So, so much excitement around that. I can't begin to tell you what the ad agency response has been over the last several months in New York. And then from that point, it's all about scale And so, you know, we built the business at this point to really help facilitate that scale. And, you know, I alluded earlier to some great people that have joined the team. So Jim Sampe is the former head of Alpac, you know, built that, you know, $800 million a year, number one coupon company in the U.S. He's been on our advisory team. Then he joined our board, and he's just officially come aboard as our COO. So we're really excited to have his expertise. We got one of the top guys from Groupon that just joined the team. He's running all of our local sales. So, you know, he believes this can be the new Groupon. So, and obviously when you look at the model and see the locations that we have, incredible opportunity there. You know, just a lot of high level guys coming in to join and really lending their expertise and their wisdom and their skill sets to helping to grow what we've got. So from New York, you know, we believe we're going to be really successful and be a lot more capital, and we'll be able to go out there and, you know, deploy across the country.
You think this is going to take a lot of money? I mean, you're probably going to have to raise pretty quickly after that launch. Would you agree? Or what are you thinking of sort of, you know, when I think about this, you're sort of going into Google space, you're getting into a lot of people's spaces, a lot of spaces that are really competitive. And even just, I was just thinking about this while you're talking. Yesterday morning, I'm walking through London Heathrow Airport with my kids, going through the duty free, you know, aisle. And there's a little animated robot that says, "Oh, hi, come over." And my kids, who are 7 and 4 years old, start playing with this robot. And it's like, "You want to play a game?" And you start to play this game, and then it's prompting for your email. But then it's like the game is to win a coupon that you can use there in the duty free. And I can't remember the name of the company. I actually forgot about this until you mentioned it. But it's sort of in your space, right? I mean, it's kind of the same concept. I'm interacting with a game with a little robot, winning something right there on the spot.
Yeah.
So really the point is not that, but the question is, are you going to have to raise, you know, big money pretty much for the next couple of years, or how are you thinking about future fundraising strategy?
It's going to be a ton of investor interest. There already is. And obviously launching in the market and having success in New York is going to open up a lot of doors. So that's exciting. But, you know, the gamification space, to your point, with that other kiosk, I mean, gamification is one of the hottest trends in marketing today, right? Every ad agency that we meet with is looking to do gamification programs. 70% of the top companies, the global companies, are doing prize promotions. The problem is that there's lack of scalable opportunities or methods or platforms to be able to deploy prize promotions efficiently. You know, we did some testing with Adam Tickets, right? Who's a partner of ours, and then they've grown through the weeds and have a great team and product. We did some testing with them last year for the Baywatch movie with The Rock and Zac Efron. And we deployed that prize promotion in 14 malls within 24 hours of getting a contract, right? You know, most national prize promotions take a year, 6 months, you know, minimum to set up. And Priatech did it turnkey in, you know, 24-hour turnaround time. So with those types of technologies in place and the patented process that we do this, we just believe that there's so many opportunities, you know, capital fundraising, just success, money in the market, all of these things, we can fuel the business. And we've got 300 machines already built. So, we've already built 300 machines. They're ready to deploy. They're in our warehouse right now, you know, getting ready for New York and beyond. So, we're pretty pumped, man. We kind of see it all falling into place. And, you know, obviously it's just about now execution and getting it out there and hitting a home run.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. I've taken enough of your time. This is a really fun, exciting story. Last question. Do you have anything you want to plug, any call to action, anything you're hiring for, you know, Open Job Rec, or if people want to learn more, how do they find out and get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So, you know, hit us up. Priatech.com is our website, and you can check out In2Win. That's In2Win.io. We're getting ready to have that site go live, and there's going to be a ton of information. People can check out the white paper. There's going to be a ton on, you know, the whole blockchain side of the business, right? Hit us up on LinkedIn. So I'm Bobby Tinsley. on LinkedIn and Malin. It's like Melinda, but drop the A, and with Priya Tech. And, you know, we're definitely, like we said, we're going to be out on the road over the next few months. We'll definitely be out there engaging the community and love the dialogue, and would love to meet and connect in any way possible, hopefully bring value to you guys as you brought to us. So.
Fun stuff. Yeah, I'll post a link to the European, is that a publicly available YouTube video, the European Roadshow Highlights?
Can I put the Roadshow Highlights, and then also, and we just have one that we just did a more in-depth interview with John and Jerry in Monaco, and that's a good one. I just put that on LinkedIn as well, so.
Cool. Send me that. I'll include that in the notes on the podcast. That'll be fun.
Perfect.
Bobby, this is really fun. Super exciting to hear. And can't wait to see what the next 12, 18 months bring you. So we'll do another interview after a year from now. Once you've
gone big.
If I can
get the
founder, that'll be the
goal. Oh, whatever. Hey, Nathan, appreciate the interview, your support, and building a great platform, man. Because Founder Suite's pretty cool, and it's helped a lot, especially organizational for investors is always challenging, and you guys made it pretty intuitive. So really appreciate your help and your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you. All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend. Over and out.
Hey, buddy. Over and out. Talk to you later, man. Thanks.